Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme.
Miranda Keeling is a writer and performer. She writes plays, screenplays, short stories, articles and poems. And as an actor, she works in radio, voiceover, TV, film and stage, and is the winner of BBC Radio's Norman Beaton Fellowship. Inspired by her popular Twitter account, her book, The Year I Stopped to Notice, brings together her observations of the magic humour and strangeness of ordinary life. And she joins us today on the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast.
I'd like to talk to you a bit about social media as well, because I think I remember hearing a little thing that you said about how when you started on social media, you sort of went there to kind of connect with other people and make connections and sort of join a community. But once you sort of got in there, you particularly on Twitter, you sort of found that there was a bit of a disconnect there, and perhaps actually it can be quite isolating and lonely on some social media platforms. And I guess what you started to do with your own personal account was you started to sort of talk about what you were seeing out in the world and kind of describing those things you've seen, and that sort of transformed a little bit how you kind of worked on there. Tell us a little bit about what kind of led you to doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the being led to kind of observe things and write them down was a separate path to the social media path, and they ended up kind of arriving together, but I didn't ever imagine they would. You know, at the time that I went on Twitter, which feels like 1,000 years ago, yeah. Everybody was just basically talking about what they were doing at work. That was all they were doing. Or they would make a pun, you know, or a silly joke or something. And so I found it a sort of lonely place, social media. I didn't really, because I wasn't on Facebook or anything when I first started posting on Twitter. And of course, if you don't have many followers, you say, you know, you make a little joke or you say something about your work and nobody responds, and you just think,
you might get one like.
I was going to say, you get that one like, and then you kind of, you're eternally loyal to that person forever.
Yeah. Like everything they post.
Yeah, you make sure you follow them. You just like everything. You're like, oh, I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so much.
I've still got those kind of contacts from the beginning, you know, people who they remember, because I used to have an anonymous account that had an icon of a little ginger cat. And occasionally, that's how I started on Twitter, and then I moved to my name. And occasionally people say, I remember you when you were a cat. but yeah, so the observations, in answer to your question, they initially were something that I was almost using Twitter as a sort of diary for. I didn't think they were going to be really heard. They were just kind of something I was playing with, and that was somewhere to put them. And then really quite quickly the responses started to come, and then it's just gone from there. It's just been amazing.
I was going to say, I mean, observing or observation, it's not really something, I mean, it's something we do when we're little, you know, isn't it? You know, we, yes, things are new to us. So we go out and we've never seen a flower before, we've never seen a bird before, and everything's really exciting. And so we do kind of get used to observing. We're observing all the time because our brains are sort of learning about new things. But as we get older, I think, and this is the same for me, you know, I think we get out of the habit of learning to observe, or at least being conscious about observing things. We just tend to look and then to move on, or just to take things as read. And we might kind of observe things, you know, subconsciously in our brain, but we don't, it takes time and effort, I think, to really consciously sit down and actually observe and look and absorb. Would you say that was right?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think the other thing that we do, because I observe children a lot, you know, just because there are kids around everywhere, and they're looking at their world and they're constantly amazed and confused and interested in it, amazed by. And I think we forget a bit of that. We might observe stuff all the time, but we're not thinking, oh my gosh, there's water coming out of the sky. This is crazy. No. Or, you know, whatever it is, leaves. Children are fascinated by leaves. And I think it's about remembering that those things are still amazing. It doesn't matter how old we are. If we stop and notice that rain comes out of the sky, it's fabulous.
I mean, when you just said that then, I was like, God, that is rain. That's what rain is. That's incredible. Yeah. So I guess it's linked to that sense of wonder, isn't it? And I suppose that in itself helps us to still imagine and to kind of open up that creativity in our own brains as well, is that we're still excited and kind of we're still find things fascinating. And we're still curious, because I think we lose curiosity as well, don't we? Which can be part of observing, I suppose. I mean, I'm always really keen on observing human behaviour. Yeah, like just sitting on a bench and just watching people around me and
people
thinking,
watching is the best thing
thinking,
ever.
Who are you? Where are you going? What are you up to? Like, you know, what's your backstory? And just, I absolutely love it. I did that yesterday afternoon, actually, in London. I just sat there in the sunshine and I looked around and I thought, God, I could do this for ages.
I used to go to Camden Market to do that specifically, because it was just this place which brought together all these kind of fantastic people, really interestingly dressed, you know, and all these different kind of cultures together. And yeah, it's funny, I especially now I'm a parent, I think I don't go to places specifically to do people watching, just because I'm always trying to do this and then this and then that. But I did used to make space for that specifically. And I remember being fascinated when I used to go and see a lot of films at the BFI, and you went over the Thames on the bus and there'd be people sitting at the window seat, not looking at the Thames. They'd be reading or they'd be, you know, looking at their phones or whatever. And I don't know. For me, when I cross the Thames, it's the largest body of water in London that I get to cross. And it's amazing at any time of day. And I think it's just such a special thing when you do look up from your book or your phone and you're reminded, you know, of these things that are just around you all the time.
So I guess that brings us on to what gets in the way of us observing and noticing. And I suppose, like you say there, it's technology, maybe it's the pace of life, it's the demands of life that we all face. How do you think we can kind of overcome some of those obstacles to help us notice and observe a bit more about what's actually around us rather than being in our own little world?
It's a really good question. I don't know if I know, if I could sort of tell you definitively what that answer is, but my guess is that it's keeping your phone in your bag, you know, that especially because phones are so addictive. And I think it sounds a bit big, this, but I've been thinking a lot about how life is quite short, you know, and we're here for this brief time. And it's really worth noticing what's around you, because every day that you have is, you know, one of the days that you're using up, in a sense. And I mean that positively. I think that reminds me often to look up.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, we only have so many Christmases. We only have so many summers, you know, all seasons. You know, this could be your, you know, this could be the next summer, could be your last summer. You know, I'm not dread to think that that's to happen, but, you know, you've got to, so actually take in all the elements of those seasons. Yes. I think that's really important. Now you're an actress as well, and I guess, you know, observing is part of that job. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got into acting? Was that something you did from a young age?
Yeah, so I feel like I've always wanted to tell stories. That's and every way, everything that I'm doing is telling a story of some form or another, right? And so I remember first putting on plays for my parents when me and my brother were really small, and we would, you know, make these programs for the play, you know, for our parents to read. And so acting is something I started acting and singing when I was really young in America, where I grew up. And I never formally trained. I just kept working. I got to London and ended up doing an arts degree for a while, and kind of telling stories through glass sculpture because I was a glass maker. Anyway, and then acting, you're so right about, Giles, about it being about observing. The only way that you can act, in a sense, is if you've observed humanity, I think, if that doesn't sound sort of pretentious, but you've got to try and reflect to people someone who's real. And for that, you've really got to listen to what people are like.
That's so true, isn't it? You just reminded me of when I was... So I've got two sisters and a brother, and when we were little, we used to put on plays. We put on a play for our friends. I remember inviting, like, we were allowed three friends each to come around to our house. And we did
quite a big audience.
Oh, a lot.
For the first one. and we did a Christmas Carol, and because my brother really loved musicals, we did the Phantom of the Opera. I know he really went for it. He loves. I mean, he loves acting. He loves theatre. He loves everything to do with the theatre. And so, because I was the smallest, I got roped into all kinds of things. And I remember playing Scrooge. And I was dressed up in my nightdress, which was absolutely hideous. And someone put a cut-up pair of blue tights on my head. That's like a nightcap. And I've still got the photos to prove it. You brought back a lot of memories for me there, Miranda.
You work in medicine, right?
What's that?
As a doctor, you work in medicine, right?
Yes. So I'm a medical doctor, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I do some broadcasting as well. And that's, I can very much relate to what you were saying about... being interested in people's stories and storytelling and how we learn through stories and about kind of our experiences and how we deal with things. So I'm a big fan of understanding people's stories, which is why I love people watching and creating as well.
Because I do sometimes, as an actor, I do work with doctors, with communication.
I do that. I work with actors who do that, and that's fascinating. Great. Yeah, that's fascinating to see. And like you say, they literally just to see, I mean, obviously, you know, I've been to theatre, I've seen actors on the stage, but to see actors literally going into that role of patient and taking on that whole persona, you know, when you've been outside with them drinking a cup of tea just before the actual session starts with the students, is just incredible. Mm-hmm. Really, really is. Yeah.
That's amazing. So going back to that, the acting stuff. So I guess you said you didn't sort of formally train, but again, that sort of observation and, you know, looking and seeing what's going on in the world and seeing how people interact with each other is kind of your, it's a training ground really for you.
Yeah. And I think actually thinking about it, I haven't really formally trained as a writer either. And I, you know, whenever in my life I sort of think, oh, I must stop and do some training, I just sort of carry on doing it, and it kind of has a momentum of its own. And I think, I sort of feel like that's, you know, been inspired by other people that I've worked with and been around who haven't trained formally, and kind of remembering that we can all do it. And that's the thing about the observing, is that we can all do it all the time. And I have quite a few people who follow me who are partially sighted or don't see, and they enjoy them because they say that what I'm writing is quite visual and it kind of connects to that world. I'd be really interested actually to talk to somebody who is visually impaired about what they would observe, you know, because they'd have their own, you know, sense set to observe things through.
Mm. And that's also interesting, isn't it? In terms of how we all, so, you know, we all might kind of notice, I don't know, a leaf on the ground, but our perception of that is totally different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, just because we see or we hear the same thing, or we read something that the same words, we're going to interpret that differently, take that on differently, perceive that differently, and it's going to have all kinds of different associations as well, depending on who we are, where we're from, like what our experiences have been of that before. So that's what fascinates me as well, is that you can observe the same thing and yet take away a totally different message or perception from that as well.
Yeah, that really fascinates me, that part of it. And often discussions come up with, you know, these followers who have I've described something, and then they'll start. Somebody, I mentioned halloumi in an observation, and somebody wrote in saying, "What's halloumi?" And then there's this just huge discussion back and forth about people who do know what it is, whether they like it, whether they don't, how you should. And that variety. And then on the other side of that, I was with a friend years ago, and I asked him to look at something we could both see and write down what he thought about it. Just that one instruction. And it was a chair fallen over in this kind of estate, and there was stuffing coming out of it, and there were weeds growing all around this chair anyway. And then when we both looked at each other's notes, we'd both compared the image to a fallen soldier in a field of poppies. And that was fascinating to me. And who knows, maybe we've had a similar education in a similar country or whatever, and that would come up. But it's still astonishing to me that a chair, you know, said that to us both.
Wow.
Variety. And then there's connection that would surprise you as well.
Yeah, that really is incredible, isn't it? And like you say, maybe there's an image that you've both seen, or who knows? This is why the brain is like so fascinating. And I suppose also we're talking about observation, observing things kind of outside ourselves, but I suppose the other element of it is observing ourselves and observing our thoughts and our words and our feelings and our actions. And I guess that's the basis of us understanding who we are and how we can be in the world. And I know obviously that's the basis of, you know, trying to kind of cut out the noise of the outside world. Obviously through your book and what you've been doing with your work, did you find benefits for yourself in terms of actually through observing external things, you actually started to become more connected to yourself and observe more internally, if you like?
I think I have. It's a really lovely question. I think I've also started to gently put myself into the observations more and be brave about that. Because there are certain things where I might think I have an opinion about it, but I don't want to say, like, I've experienced grief too, or whatever it is, you know. And I've started to sometimes mention that's how I feel, or it resonates with me. It's maybe a subject that's happy, maybe it's a subject that's difficult. And I think actually people appreciate it, because then they seem to start opening up about what's happening for them in response. So it must take away some of that anonymity and distance. And it also makes me realize how busy my mind is most of the time, you know. And if I stop to really, really take notice of a small thing and work out exactly how to describe it so that I can convey this wonder in this tiny thing, then all of the stuff that's around us all the time that's so stressful is gone in that time. It's like a practice.
That is so true, isn't it? Once we start to notice and be present, I suppose, then, like you say, all of those thoughts and busyness and all of the chatter in the world just tends to disappear. And I guess that's what also happens when, you know, when we write, when we're creative, when we, you know, when we listen to music. And that's why I suppose we love all of that stuff. That's why I love it, because when I go for a run and I listen to music, I'm just totally there and I forget everything else. And all I'm doing is literally just there running with my beautiful music in my ears. And that's what, I think that's the kind of the key to finding that kind of peace and that happiness, isn't it? Being in that present moment. And it's not efforting the thoughts out. It just kind of happens because you're putting your focus somewhere else.
Yeah. We used to talk about it a lot when we did radio, of being in flow. Mm. I don't know if you've probably heard that. And you get a feeling almost of, I mean, whether you're religious or not, I think it's a similar feeling of just something flowing through you from somewhere. And in that moment, you're not thinking about the microphone and the words that you're saying in the script in your hand or anything. It's just a pouring sensation. And you can't connect to that all the time, but I bet that everybody who's creating something has those moments.
I think that's so true.
That's amazing. Now, there's lots of observations that I love in the book, and I'm going to read one of them now, but maybe while I'm reading it, you can think of some of the ones that have particularly stuck with you. The one that I liked is this one. A little boy refuses to get onto the train at Brighton station until his family agrees to refer to him as the most beautiful of heroes. Which I think is just one of my favorites. Yeah. I just think it's just fantastic and exactly the sort of thing my kids would have said at a similar age. But yeah, is there any that really have stuck with you? Because I guess, you know, there's funny ones, there's obviously sadder ones and more poignant ones. But so yeah, the ones that sort of stick with you.
I could read you some of what.
Yeah, that would be lovely. Yeah. Okay.
Little girl on the bus, nice notebook. Me, thanks. Little girl, is it a diary? Me, I write about things I see. Little girl, like me. Me, exactly. Little girl, cool. So that's the kind of the a man walking along Caledonian Road falls over onto a huge roll of bubble wrap that he is hugging, perhaps for just this sort of situation. Bizarrely, at different ends of a quiet train carriage, two strangers say rather loudly to themselves at the same time, still drunk. As the door of this cafe opens, a breeze swirls in, rifles through every page of my notebook as if looking for something, and then leaves again. And it's like you can hear from them that some of them are really straightforward. They're just kind of a man sits. And I think there's something lovely about this. Yeah. You know, a man sits in the cafe, he wears a yellow jumper, a dog sleeps across his foot. That's it. And it's very small, but in that you've got so much that you can imagine. And on the other hand, you've got things like the notebook one, where something happens that's very basic, which is that the wind rifles through my notebook, right? But it's not rifling through my notebook. It's just blowing, you know? And then I'm adding this idea that the wind is reading my notebook, because sometimes I see that in the instant and sometimes I make a note to myself of what happened and it's only on looking back that I realize, oh, that's what it felt like.
They are beautiful, and they read, I mean, as you're reading those, I could visualize them, I could hear the wind through the pages of your notebook, and yet so easy, so they're so evocative and yet so easy. If you're in that situation, to ignore and to not notice, you know, just to be there and to be busy in your mind. And I suppose you must have got lots of feedback from people in terms of the book saying, you know, this has helped me kind of maybe notice more or slow down. What kind of comments have you had about the book from people who've read it?
So I get some incredible comments. I had a really lovely one recently, which surprised me and passed on to the publisher because it was really interesting. It was a woman who has a daughter. So she bought it for herself, and her 12-year-old daughter wasn't letting her read it because she was reading it. But the interesting thing about that is her daughter has dyslexia and doesn't enjoy reading at all. But she enjoyed this because she said she could read this, you know, she could read one short observation like that on a page or maybe two and have finished a page of a book and then turn it. So there's something digestible about the size of them, I think. And then people are saying, I'm just getting lots of really nice comments about, I guess, how they make people think about where they are. And then sometimes when I hit on subjects like, I don't know, the menopause or whatever, is the menopause one in the book? I think it is. Yes, you know, where she says, this woman says, what blusher do you use? She's complimenting her makeup, and the other woman says, cold air, brisk walk, alcohol. that gets people talking as well about kind of what they're going through. I think it's about relatable content. Does that sound right? Or something that has a broad spectrum. In fact, I was talking to somebody today who said that she's literally writing out by hand observations for the book into letters that she's writing to friends, because each, you know, something like that one man on the tube, I'm tired, and then his wife says, oh, we're all tired, Brian. All of us understand, we've been the wife, we've been Brian, you know, we can relate to it. So she's putting things like that into these letters to friends, and she said it doesn't really matter who I'm writing to, it works anyway.
That's amazing, isn't it? And like you say, I think it's I mean, it does kind of almost give you a snapshot into people's lives as well, doesn't it? Some of those observations there's an Instagram account that I found. I can't remember the name of it, but basically someone set it up, and whenever they find a little bit of paper or a note, that's been dropped on the floor or is somewhere, they take a picture of it, and it's, and sometimes it's just a segment of the note or a list or something like that. And are examples of like half a shopping list, or, you know, someone writing themselves a note to remember to do something. And it's just fascinating to think what, you know, when you see someone else's shopping list or just a scrap of it, you think, wow, that person, like, I can relate to that.
Oh, that person went home without bananas.
But also how random. It's like a little, it's like a little peek into, it's like kind of getting a curtain and just kind of, you know, just having a little look at someone's front room, you know, like at Christmas when, you know, it's very dark, you go for a walk around the block or something. And the curtains aren't shut and you can just look into people's living rooms and think, what are you doing? What are you watching? What's going on? And I think with your, you know, with that Instagram account, with your book, I think it's the same thing, where you just have a little glance into someone else's life and someone else's world. And I think that in itself, I mean, that can seem like a very small thing that's just for ourselves, but actually that in itself, and like what you were saying, Miranda, if you can see a bit of yourself in the other person, then actually that's what connects us all together. And that's what, you know, is the foundation of empathy and understanding and tolerance and trying to really kind of build community. So it's actually a really big thing as opposed to seeming like a small thing.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think there is a larger echo happening here. You know, there's a small thing, and then the echo is what it means to everyone. And also, I guess, the fact that every single person alive, their day is made up of all of these things. It's like a kind of quilt of these things, isn't it? And we all recognize a square of the quilt as similar to our own, or we're fascinated because it's different. Or something represents something about you, how you feel. There was this guy I saw who was struggling to put up this sign for a conference for ages, and it was quite windy or something. I can't remember, the weather was bad. Anyway, he finally managed to put up this sign, and it said, team building. and I posted it. There were so many of us like, this by day, whatever, you know. The sort of familiar that... has a potentially more profound thing to say.
Exactly. I've been there before. I've been there before. I know what that feels like. I can feel your pain. I can feel your struggle.
And I can laugh about it at the same time, you know, which I think is nice.
We all need to laugh in life as well, I think, especially at the moment. Have you, I mean, obviously I'm sure you're very discreet when you observe and when you kind of, you know, make a note of what you're seeing, but have you ever had anybody who's a bit like, what are you doing? What are you writing? Anyone who's objected to you observing them? No.
I think if I felt that, then I'd explain it and I'd stop also, because I think two things. One, it's not fair. And two, also, if I alter what's happening, then it's different anyway. But sometimes if my friends say something hilarious or their kids do, then I will say, how do you feel about me tweeting that anonymously? And they'll tell me yes or no. And then I can say, man, Finsbury Park or whatever. I try to be really discreet about it. I try not to post anything that anyone could be identified by and upset by. That's really important to me. It's really important that it's done compassionately, this, for me anyway, I have squirrels running across my roof sometimes. I wouldn't ever want anyone to recognize themselves and feel hurt by it. That would be awful.
Yeah, so watch out for the tweet. Went on podcast with two amateurs.
Man in a green kitchen. Yes, I'm always aware of that. And also, if I think this is a brilliant thing, people should read it, but it might be not something they'd want, then I might change the name, I guess, if that happened. But I'm not really sure it has. Because I don't think Brian would be upset if you read that.
I think he'd laugh. I think from what I'm visualising about him and his interaction, I think he'd...
He's called Brian. He must be upset to humour.
Also, there's a privacy to, it sounds really funny, but I've noticed there's a privacy, an element of privacy to travelling on transport. Because you're in your little, if you're on a big train, you're in your little seats and, you know, that's your kind of section. And even when you're on the tube facing people, I think there's a sense of people being so surrounded by strangers that they almost zone you out and they're just on their own. It's a funny thing. you do see all sorts of lovely little details about people that you definitely wouldn't see if you were in a meeting with them, or kind of having a chat to them, or whatever. The way that they fold their glasses up against their cheek, or, you know, something about how they prop something up on their lap when they're reading.
That's interesting, isn't it? The different environments where perhaps we, even though we're in public, we forget that we are, I'm thinking about a hairdresser's, you know, salon, for example, where classically someone would sit down and you're in a huge place potentially with, you know, 15 other people. And yet you just feel like you're there with a hairdresser who's your friend. And you just start saying all kinds of things out loud. And, you know, there are mirrors everywhere. So obviously you can see there are lots of other people, but there are all those environments, aren't there, where you know, we forget.
Yes.
And they're the kind of environments where really interesting things come out, but not just for other people to hear and overhear, but actually also sometimes for ourselves, we kind of end up opening up about things we would never even say before, and never even think before.
It's really funny, that, isn't it? You do end up sort of using your hairdresser as a bit of a therapist. What is it like for them?
They must think, same for taxi drivers. I think all kinds of conversations that I've had with taxi drivers over the years. Just absolutely, I've always thought someone should do a podcast in a taxi and just kind of have people going in and out. So Miranda, looking to the future, where is the observation and the observing and the small things? Where is that going for you? Is that going to still be part of your journey forwards, or are you going to divert, or what's your sense about the future?
My feeling is, because I sometimes get messages that say, "Don't stop doing this." She's lovely and doesn't feel like a pressure, because I don't have any desire to stop doing it. And I think even if I stopped writing it down, I'd still be looking anyway. I've been doing it since I was a child. My feeling is the book's been incredible to make. And, you know, I had 40,000 odd observations to go through to get these ones for the book. And so in terms of material for the next thing or the next thing, I think there could be maybe a set of them, and you have different perspectives on it. Like maybe there's one that's themed in different ways, family or love or strangers or whatever. And in terms of observing itself, I can't imagine stopping doing it. Although maybe sometimes my family would like me to be less distracted by and more involved in what they're trying to tell me. I don't know.
Well, it must. I mean, like you say, I mean, you've been like that since a child, and obviously you're naturally curious and naturally interested in what's around you, which is amazing. But I suppose also it must now have become actually a habit as well. That perhaps you are more aware of it, and so it has become quite habitual in your mind and in your system to do that. So potentially it's not necessarily a habit you'd want to break anyway, because it's a lovely one, but I suppose it's become maybe a little bit automatic for you to do that once you start, I think, noticing things. It's quite difficult not to.
It becomes quite addictive, I find. I mean, there's a little cafe I go to. I go there every day because I want to watch people and have conversations as well. And it does become a bit addictive. I'm spending fortunes in coffee. But there is something like lovely about, I think, having that connection with people. I think, you know, as well as observing, actually connecting and having conversations with people is really,
it's really lovely. Talking to strangers is lovely. Watching a person walk into a cafe, the way they push the door open, the way when they look over their shoulder before they come in, you know, all of that is fascinating and tiny and huge.
Yeah. That's so true. Yeah. It is tiny, but it is also huge as well, isn't it? That's why it's so amazing. So obviously, Miranda, this podcast is all about things I forgot were good for me. So
yeah, I love the title, by the way.
Thank you.
So what is that one thing for you?
It's funny. I think one of my main things I would answer to that is breathing. And I was listening to the podcast that you had on. You had a breathing podcast on recently that really, really resonated with me. It feels like in stopping to notice stuff, you're taking the equivalent of a breath in this busyness. So I think taking a breath is the best way that I would describe it. Yeah, making sure you have time to do that. We don't always breathe well.
That's so true. Taking a breath from life and all of its noise and all of its hoo-ha, as I would say. All of the hoo-ha.
Well, it is a form of meditation, isn't it? When you're, I think, you know, when you're, like if you're standing on a train platform, for example, and you can just stand there for a minute and you can feel the bag on your back and you can feel the sounds around you, and I think that's really important to take that time and space sometimes.
Have you seen those beautiful things they can do sometimes with film where they can have it look like somebody? They did it in the recent West Side Story, I think, where they have people who look like they're standing still and everybody around is moving.
Yeah.
That's a feeling.
I'm always really grateful for those moments. Like if my train's delayed or and someone's like, oh, are you all right? Or, you know, I'm sorry you're having to wait around. And I often say to them, I'm like, sure, I actually love it because I don't have to do anything. It's just really nice. Yeah,
well, you can't do anything, can you?
Lovely to actually not be able to do something. And although, you know, instead of waiting for those moments to happen to me, I really should start creating those moments proactively for myself. And I think that's probably what, you know, what your book has definitely reinforced for me, having looked at it.
Oh,
geez.
Good.
Yeah.
Miranda, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
And
it's such a wonderful thing. And your Twitter feed is brilliant as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Forgot Podcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.